You're listening to the On the NBA Beat podcast, a show packed with nuanced perspectives on the league's most important stories.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to shoot.
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
Jordan. Oh, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan.
And now, your hosts, Lauren Lee Chen, and the twins, Aaron and Joshua Fishman.
Thanks for tuning in for our Western Conference preview. This is On the NBA Beat, and I'm your host, Aaron Fishman. With the season just about underway, I've brought in Alex Kennedy for an in-depth discussion of the deep and talented West. On October 14th, 2015, Alex was gracious enough to serve as On the NBA Beat's inaugural guest, and he previewed the Western Conference back then, too. 8 years later, he's now the Chief Content Officer at BasketballNews.com and host of Running Up the Score, a live sports show that airs Tuesdays and Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Unsurprisingly, Alex likes the defending champion Nuggets as the favorites to come out of the West, but he also identifies more than a handful of others as fringe contenders, at the very least. We'll also discuss the three rookies generating a ton of preseason buzz and a slew of other timely topics. Here we go. Alex, it's great to be joined by you. We're actually going to be doing a Western Conference preview this time with you, but our very first guest, you're back full circle. Good to have you here.
Great to be back. It's always fun to catch up with you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. And we're going to start off on a really basic level. The Denver Nuggets are the defending champions. And for that reason, they are considered co-favorite or favorite to win the championship. In the GM survey, they got 10 votes, as did the Boston Celtics. The Bucks got 7. I guess a two-part question. Why or why not do you believe that the Denver Nuggets should be the favorite to come out of the West? And then how many other championship contenders do you believe reside in the Western Conference, and who are they?
Yeah, I think Denver is definitely the favorite. I love this team, just the way that they, you know, assembled this roster. It's really impressive. And most of the team is back. Obviously, they lost, you know, Bruce Brown. But I think this is a team that has been together. This core has been together for years, and they have so much chemistry. And I think that's one of the most undervalued things in sports. We tend to get excited about these big blockbuster moves and player movement. But chemistry and continuity really, really helps and goes a long way when you're trying to contend for a championship. So the fact that they just did it last season and bring pretty much everyone back, and they all know how to play with each other, I think that makes them very scary. They've also done a great job of drafting and kind of adding pieces around that superstar core. Their supporting cast, they're great at kind of finding contributors there. So I like this roster a lot. I think they're going to be tough to beat. You know, I don't know if they'll be the number one seed in the West, just because they're going to obviously have their eyes set on winning a championship and going on a big postseason run. So, you know, we'll see how much they're, you know, playing their guys every single night. If I had to guess, they'll probably be number one or number two in the West. And then, yeah, I think they're definitely the favorite for me, not only in the Western Conference, but in the entire NBA. Looking at the West as a whole, though, I would say there are a handful of contenders. Denver, Phoenix, the Lakers. And then I think to a lesser extent, you go and look at, you know, Sacramento, Memphis, Golden State, the Clippers. You know, I think Denver, Phoenix, and the Lakers really jump out as kind of the top tier to me. The Suns, it'll be interesting to see what this team looks like because on paper, they're obviously loaded. Adding Brad Beal to Devin Booker, Kevin Durant. Jusuf Nurkic, I think, is interesting. You know, he can provide some spacing and knock down some threes, which is something they wouldn't have had with DeAndre Ayton. And, you know, obviously, I think they were frustrated with Ayton's lack of a motor and, you know, not always hustling and, you know, some of the issues that he had there. So, you know, the question is, can Nurkic stay healthy? You know, is there going to be any kind of drop-off? Because he's struggled at times at Portland in recent years. And their depth is a question, too. You know, they tried this offseason to kind of assemble a bench, went out and got Eric Gordon, you know, a number of guys that are solid contributors on minimum contracts, but they don't have the same depth as some of these other contenders that we're going to talk about in both conferences. So But Phoenix, you have to put them near the top. I mean, they have a loaded roster. And then when you look at some of like the Lakers, they were so great after that midseason shakeup last year. I think they had a great offseason too. Rob Pelinka, I know Laker fans were frustrated with him for a bit there, but he's made some really good moves. I think they had a really strong offseason. And they re-signed a number of their own talented players. So if they look like they did in the second half of last season, they could be a top team in the West. I think with them, as well as with the Clippers, I would say, it really comes down to health. You know, that's always kind of a question when you're talking about LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and then with the Clippers, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, some of these pieces. And then I think you look at teams like Memphis, Sacramento, Golden State, it's hard to ever count them out just with their experience. The Chris Paul experiment will be really interesting. I'm curious to see how that kind of goes. And then Sacramento, I think everyone's kind of sleeping on them and thinks, oh, last year's a fluke. I don't think that's necessarily the case. Again, I'm a big believer in chemistry and continuity. And this group played so well last season and now kind of brings everyone back another year of experience under their belts, knowing, you know, what to do, how to coexist. So, and at Memphis, the Ja Morant question is obviously out there, but, you know, they add Marcus Smart. They have a really nice team. So I would say Denver's definitely the favorite. After that, Phoenix and LA are the two top teams for me. And then I would say the tier below with like potential contenders would be Memphis, Sacramento, the Clippers, and Golden State.
It's difficult to know where to start. When you were just listing all of those intriguing storylines, I wanted to follow up on every single one. Maybe it's my bias to being on the West Coast here and watching more Western Conference, but also just given the amazing level of parity last season, seeds 4th through 10th place were separated by 3 games. And even the Kings at 3rd place were only 3 games ahead of 4th place. So I just think it's so fascinating. We won't touch on every single one of those storylines that you just mentioned, but we'll try to hit on a lot of them. I mean, I think the East is fascinating too. I'm just especially intrigued by the West coming into the season. And I just mentioned the level of parity. To what extent do you expect it to kind of be more of the same this season?
Yeah, I think there's a ton of parity. It's going to be one of those fun years where you look at not only just the Western Conference, but the NBA as a whole. There's not that one team that we all kind of know, oh, this team's definitely going to win it all, or this team's definitely going to the NBA Finals. Obviously, there are certain favorites like Denver, Boston, like we talked about. But, you know, it's not like one of those years where you have teams like the Cavaliers and Warriors a couple years ago that it was just obvious they were on a collision course every single year. You know, I just answered the question about how many contenders there are. The fact that I'm listing 7 teams is pretty
wild.
That's
wild.
And yeah, it says a lot about kind of the state of the Western Conference. And that doesn't even factor in the Pelicans, who with Zion healthy and this core, that could be interesting. The Mavericks with a full season of Luka and Kyrie and the supporting cast they have there. You know, I think there's some people that could be expecting a Timberwolves breakout potentially, and you know, maybe they take a step forward. So, you know, I wouldn't put those teams on the contender level, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, what teams make the playoffs, because there's going to be inevitably one or two good teams in the Western Conference that doesn't make the playoffs, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, it's just a loaded conference. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's what makes it so fun. So many fan bases right now have hope, and it's legitimate too. It's not just irrational hope that their team could be really good this season. Talking about fun, 3 particular rookies in the Western Conference are really generating a lot of buzz right now, and for good reason. And that's Victor Wembanyama, Chet Holmgren, and Scoot Henderson. If you can just run through each one of them, what makes them special, I would love to hear. And also, if there's a 4th or any other Western Conference rookie that you're particularly excited about his impact this season, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, Victor Wembanyama, starting with him, I'm sure some of your listeners saw the game the other day against the Miami Heat, the preseason game, where he's just scoring from everywhere, blocking shots left and right. I mean, creating for himself and others off the dribble. This is a guy that is 7'4", 7'5", and he's out there dribbling like a point guard and creating for others and doing step back threes and things like that. So it's just with him, it's just so hard to guard someone like that. And he's so skilled. It's really, we haven't seen a player like him ever. You know, we saw last year whenever he was playing against Scoot Henderson and kind of getting all this attention as a draft prospect. LeBron James said he's an alien. He was like, I don't want to use the word unicorn. That gets thrown around too often. He's an alien. Giannis said he could be the best player in the NBA. I mean, these are superstar players that are raving about him and talking about him coming in and just dominating the league. Giannis even said, he was like, I think I need to start winning some championships now because Victor Wembanyama is coming, essentially. So that says a lot. It's just the skill mixed with his size and length. And everyone, I've talked to his trainer, Tim Martin, and some of the people that have coached him, and they rave about him, at, you know, off the court too. He just seems like he really gets it. His basketball IQ is incredibly high. He seems like a really smart, responsible young kid. He just checks every single box. It's like an NBA executive's dream. So I was not surprised that, you know, all this hype started. I mean, he's been talked about as a potential number one pick for like 3 or 4 years now. You know, he's been that kind of prospect. So, yeah, I think the hype is warranted. He's the most hyped up prospect since LeBron James. It's always tough when you're a player like that, getting that kind of hype. It's hard to live up to that. But if anyone can do it, I would say it's him. Scoot Henderson is a ton of fun. He's someone that entered the G League with the G League Ignite. I think he was 17 years old, and he was out there just dominating. I mean, this is someone that was playing against grown men, former NBA players, and was able to just make it look easy, put on a clinic, basically, and was creating for himself, creating for others, finishing at the rim. And I think he's had a lot of NBA mentors in his life. Colin Sexton, some other players and coaches have been in his life, you know, since he was a kid, basically kind of training him for this. So I would say he's ready to hit the ground running and make an impact from day one. The Blazers seem ready to kind of hand the keys to the franchise over to him. And he can do it on both ends too. He's an electrifying scorer, freak athlete, great passer. You know, you can look at some of his highlights and he's throwing down dunks that kind of look like a John Morant, young Russell Westbrook, explosive type, like Derrick Rose before injuries type plays. I mean, he's going to be a ton of fun to watch, kind of a highlight reel waiting to happen. And he just, again, has shown at every level, whether it's high school or G League, that he's ready for the moment. And it doesn't really matter who you put in front of him, he's going to play well. And then Chet Holmgren, it's really crazy how loaded this rookie class is because Chet is technically part of it. I think he's just a very special defender. He has the length that a lot of teams are looking for these days. You know, he can kind of drive teams crazy, not only blocking shots and altering shots, but also getting his hands in the passing lanes. You know, he's someone that has been a defensive monster since he was in high school. And I think he's gotten better as an offensive player too. You know, he's shown that he can put the ball on the floor. He can shoot a bit. You know, he can kind of do all of those kind of things. So it was interesting. In the first preseason game that Victor Wembanyama played, we saw Holmgren and Wembanyama match up against each other. And it almost feels like the future of the NBA a little bit, like these huge guys with crazy length that are kind of positionless, that can do a little bit of everything and are super skilled. Like, you know, if Chet Holmgren had played, you know, 20 years ago, they're bulking him up. They're putting him at center. He's not handling the ball. Same with Wembanyama. You know, he would have been treated like a Dwight Howard. Like, okay, we need to get you in, get you in an NBA strength and conditioning program, have you eat a ton, and we're going to make you a back-to-the-basket center and shot blocker. But today's NBA is so different. You can be a seven-footer that comes in and, you know, you're playing primarily on the wing or basically being like a point center, running the offense and creating for yourself and others. So Holmgren has a little bit of that to him too. So yeah, I think it's a really exciting class. And then outside of those three, there are a few guys I'm interested in. Amen Thompson, one of the Thompson twins, he's in Houston. He's looked great in the preseason. You know, I think there were initially questions of how much is he going to play because this Rockets team did go out and make some free agent acquisitions. And, you know, they have a lot of players that could kind of factor into their rotation. So how many minutes is he going to get? But with how well he's playing in the preseason, I think it's going to be hard for them to leave him off the floor. And then the other guy that was picked a bit later, but I am interested to see what he can do, is Keontae George in Utah. You know, he was a great scorer in college. I think he's someone that should absolutely be watched. He could step into that, you know, role in Utah where he's scoring the ball and one of their, you know, top three options and eventually is, you know, basically having the ball in his hands and putting up some big points. Even if it's not this year, it might be next year, but he's a fantastic scorer. I love the situation for him and the opportunity. It wouldn't surprise me if he's starting sooner than later. The other one I'll throw out there is Derek Lively with the Mavericks. It sounds like he's going to start from day one for them at center, catching lobs from Luka and Kyrie. It's kind of a rookie center's dream. And they've really been needing a player like that can step in and kind of help the front court. And I think he's ready to make an impact from day one too. So those are some of the guys that I'm kind of paying attention to in addition to the top three guys.
I don't know if it's like splitting hairs at this point, but can I get you on the record for a favorite for Rookie of the Year at this point?
Yeah, I have to say Wembanyama. You know, I wouldn't bet money on it because I think he's such a favorite right now that you're probably not going to make much money back if he does win it. But it's just so hard, especially seeing it you know, in the two preseason games so far. You know, he's looked fantastic. So if there were any questions like, oh, maybe he's too skinny, oh, maybe he won't be able to do the same thing against NBA players, he is fantastic. He's going to average a ton of blocks. It looks like he can, you know, be a pretty solid shooter from day one. You know, he can create for himself. I think there's no question that Scoot is going to have an opportunity to put up some crazy stats because he'll have the ball in his hands a ton. He'll have every opportunity in Portland. But I just think the Wemby hype mixed with the potential upside for him, even just in year one, makes him the favorite for me. He's a special player.
I feel like it's hard to go wrong, though, with any of those three.
Yeah,
but it really, it's going to be so much fun watching those guys. And speaking of hype, Anthony Edwards has gotten a lot of it this offseason. He starred for Team USA and FIBA, and he's gotten better each and every season, more efficient, gotten more trips to the free throw line. How high do you think his ceiling is going into this fourth campaign?
I think it's super high. I'm a huge fan of his game. He's 22 years old, which is kind of crazy. I mean, still so young.
And he's not even going to be 23 until next season.
It's crazy. I mean, the things that he's doing on the court, not only in the NBA, but like you mentioned with Team USA, are just so impressive for someone his age. I had a tweet. It was after one of his big games with Team USA. I think it was the one he had, you know, I forget what team they played, but he, you know, was the leading scorer, was making plays all over the place. I had said, you know, if you were starting an NBA team tomorrow, how many players are you taking ahead of Anthony Edwards? And it was interesting. There were some people that were saying there's only three or four players they would take over Anthony Edwards. That shows you there are some people out there that really believe he could be a top cornerstone or like one of the top guys to build around going forward. Other people were like, oh, maybe he's in the top 20. It was a really wide range of answers, which I thought was very interesting. And some of that, too, is I'm sure, you know, there are some fans out there that may not have watched much of Minnesota play, which is understandable. You know, they're not watching them on League Pass. They're not on national TV very often. So I still think there is a coming out party to be had for Anthony Edwards. And I'm a huge fan of his game. I saw a ranking today. I think it was in Sports Illustrated. They were ranking the top five shooting guards in the league, and they had him at number three. I wouldn't be surprised if after this season we're talking about him as number two and, you know, up there with Devin Booker, who I think is easily the top shooting guard in the league. Edwards is so talented. I'm excited to see what he looks like as he continues to develop because he is still so young and has already shown so much. I don't even know what he can do once he reaches his prime. Like, the ceiling is pretty incredible still. I'm curious to see what Minnesota can do as a team this year. Obviously, we talked about it. The Western Conference is loaded. It's going to be tough for them to, you know, be a top seed, obviously, but even to make the playoffs, it's going to be difficult. But I think there's a lot of people out there that are kind of looking at them as a possible sleeper team that, you know, could make some noise. So if they are going to do that, it's really Edwards needs to be the one to take the step forward, and they're going to only go as far as Edwards takes them. I know you had mentioned the GM survey. They had him as the breakout player. That does not surprise me. I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah,
just edged Cade Cunningham.
Yeah, Cade Cunningham has shown less because he's had the injuries and everything. So, you know, if you're talking about a guy that's like first coming onto the scene, Cade Cunningham probably fits that better. Mm-hmm. But if you're talking about a guy that is just going to make leaps and bounds and make huge strides and be in like a whole different stratosphere as a player from start of the year to end of the year, I think Edwards is a great candidate.
From a 22-year-old star now to these teams with aging stars, you alluded to it a little earlier when you talked about the Clippers and Lakers, the Warriors too. Kevin Durant is up there in age and Phoenix. So I'm curious about what impact these new rules regarding resting players will have on some of these teams. I know it's kind of early and we haven't seen it play out yet, but I'm wondering your thoughts on that, because some of these teams, like take the Warriors, for instance, they have Stephen Curry, who's going to be 36 this year. Draymond and Clay are going to be 34. They just added Chris Paul, who will be 39 in May. It's pretty crazy. LeBron's entering season 21. Yet these teams are regarded as being pretty solid and contenders. And it's hard to really quibble with that projection either. It's just, it's so fascinating right now.
Yeah, it really is. That's why I think whenever you look at the Warriors, the Clippers, the Lakers, it really does come down to health and availability. If those guys are available and producing at a high level, then they could be excellent teams. But it's always a question mark when you're talking about, you know, some of these teams. As far as the new rule, I think it's pretty interesting. The teams are going to have to get a bit strategic when it comes to resting guys, because the rules say basically that you can't rest multiple star level players, for certain games. You can't rest them during nationally televised games. So I think they're still going to find their chances to get these guys some rest. I know they also want them resting them more at home versus an away game. So I think they just need to try to follow those rules and kind of come up with a schedule. Because look, you know, they're going to try to give LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard or Chris Paul certain off nights. They're not expecting these guys to play 82 games. I know the NBA had that basically statement recently that, oh, load management doesn't actually help. They're trying to push that a little bit. I'm curious to see how that goes over. But I know a lot of players believe in load management and think it's important to still get some rest. And especially you're talking about teams that, you know, if you're a team like the Lakers or the Clippers or the Warriors, you're not celebrating a 50-win season or what seed you are in the playoffs. Like, these are all teams that have a championship in mind. So They're not going to push themselves to play every single game of the regular season to get the highest seed possible. They have a focus on winning a title. And if they think, you know, giving their guys some games off can help with that goal, they're going to, you know, prioritize the championship in the long run. So I'm very curious to see how it kind of affects things. Those teams in particular, the ones that you mentioned, are, I think, the ones that everyone's kind of paying close attention to, especially the Clippers. You know, they've gotten a lot of heat for, you know, what they've kind of allowed as far as load management goes. I'm curious to see how many games these guys end up playing. You also have the other added wrinkle of the awards. Now you have to have a certain minimum number of games played in order to qualify. So, you know, if you're a player that, you know, wants to win one of these awards, that's a, you know, major award that can help you in contract negotiations and make you eligible for, you know, larger tiers of salary, then you also have to keep an eye on that too. Obviously, like, they're trying to keep the TV partners happy, especially before a new TV deal is up or their new TV deal become, you know, gets negotiated. So I understand what the NBA is thinking, but it'll be interesting to see if it works.
Yeah. And they want a better product on the court for the fans too. And
yeah,
I think it'll work on the margins. I do agree with you that teams will find a way around the rules, but it's interesting. And then another thing that the NBA has done to try to generate some buzz is the in-season tournament that is mostly going to take place in November, with it culminating with the final four teams in Las Vegas on December 7th and 9th. What are your early thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of torn. Like, I was someone that was kind of against the NBA's other additions, like the changes to the All-Star game, the play-in tournament. Initially, I was skeptical about all those, like a lot of fans were. And then the play-in tournament has been a ton of fun, and I was wrong about that. We've seen, you know, especially that first year, the All-Star game, the changes they made, it did end up working out and made for an interesting product. So the NBA typically knows what they're doing with stuff like this. And I think typically they get a lot of hate early on and people kind of don't like change and they're frustrated about it. And then once they actually see it in action and kind of understand it more, then it ends up being something that fans can get behind. So I'm curious if this is kind of the same thing, because initially I was like, I know they're trying to go kind of follow the soccer model, and fans that maybe are soccer fans, they can understand it and get behind it easier. But initially, I don't think there's going to be a ton of fan excitement behind an in-season tournament game. I don't think they're going to be like, oh, yes, tonight my team's playing in the in-season tournament, I got to go watch. Yeah. I think if anything, they're going to treat it like a regular season game and then be like, oh, yeah, this also counts for the tournament. You know, I think early on, it's going to be tough to get fans all excited. But if it ends up being a cool product, and I'm sure the teams that are doing well in the tournament and kind of advancing, their fan bases are going to get behind it and like it, because it is a little bit, it makes it more fun when your team's actually doing well. So I would say right now there's a lot of, I don't know, fans really don't care at this point entering the season. We'll see if the NBA can kind of change that during the year with their marketing and explaining how it works and all that. The one thing I will say is the fact that they're making star players have to play in those games. If anything, it just leads to more interesting nationally televised games, you know?
Yeah.
At least we know that those guys will be on the court. At least if you're a fan buying a ticket to go see a game, you know, if you're, you know, buying a ticket weeks in advance, that the star players will be available because the NBA is making them. So there is that added benefit.
Yeah, there are some interesting wrinkles too. I was reading more about it. For instance, the championship game does not count for either team's record, which makes sense because you would think it would be two good teams playing against each other. So it would be kind of a tougher schedule. Yeah, exactly. I guess I was thinking of it along similar lines because I think the more you understand and read about it, and if you're kind of a nerdy basketball fan, you might actually like it and become intrigued. But the rules and how it's set up are kind of convoluted. At least I think if you're new to it, just as a casual fan and you've never seen this before, kind of like what you were saying, if you don't follow soccer, European football, then it's like, what is this? And why should I get excited for an early season game? So I'm kind of with you on that. I don't expect it to be embraced right away, but the NBA has had success with these innovative types of approaches in recent years. So I'm hopeful it might catch on. And also, they're open-minded and they've always shown a willingness to tinker with things. So as they do it and they learn what works and what doesn't, I have confidence that they're going to be able to improve the experience overall and eventually arrive at something that works even better.
Yeah, I agree with that. I interviewed the NBA's, I think it was the head of strategy or some position like that. It was about 2 years ago. And he talked about just all the homework that's kind of went into building out this in-season tournament. Talked about how, you know, they talked with other leagues and they really put a lot of time and effort into this. And it's something that I think Adam Silver has wanted to do for like a decade. So it's not something that they just threw together last minute. It's something that they've really have worked on for quite some time and done a ton of work on. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, even if you don't care that much, it's still an interesting regular season game, except for the championship, obviously. I'm curious. I'll give it a chance. I'm kind of going into it open-minded and thinking initially I don't really care that much, but over time, I think it could become something interesting.
And like I said before, I want to talk about so many teams, and it's not really feasible given time constraints, but let's just try to hit on as many as we can.
Yeah.
And you can go longer or shorter, whatever you feel like with each one. But I guess let's just start with the CP3 fit. It seems like it could go really well, but it could not. So I guess risk, reward, what do you see there?
They're such a weird team to project. I don't know what to expect because it doesn't seem like the best fit on paper. I'm very curious to see how they use Chris Paul. I know initially there were talks like, oh, maybe he'll come off the bench. And then Chris Paul was kind of like, yeah, it's not happening. and so then you look at it, it could, you know, we could see a small lineup with Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green. And that is really interesting. So I'm very curious to see how it works out. You know, they also have some nice depth pieces there. And it just, I've learned you can't really count this Warriors team out. They're a loaded team and they know what it takes to win championships. So I think they're going to win a lot of games and I'm curious to see come playoff time, you know, what they look like, but they're probably the hardest team for me to project just because they do have this core. And again, I'm big on chemistry continuity. The core is still there, but then you add in this wild card in Chris Paul, who we don't know, you know, what level is he going to produce at? Can he stay healthy? How does he fit alongside other pieces? He's kind of the big question mark there next to this core that we know so much about and has been so great together for so long. So I'm very curious to see what Steve Kerr and his staff, you know, kind of dial up. How they're going to use Paul and then, you know, some of the other pieces. It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Same here. We had Andy Liu on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was saying that he really doesn't want Chris Paul to start. And Chris Paul has been saying the right things, that he's willing to sacrifice. He just wants that ring. But we'll see. He started every single game of his career, regular season, postseason. And yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to shake out, but super talented guy. One of the best point guards ever.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great to see him win a ring too.
Yeah, definitely.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more show.
This is Jake Fisher with Yahoo Sports and author of Built to Lose. You're listening to On the NBA Beat.
So the Kings, you mentioned them earlier, and you're not exactly buying into them falling off, even though there's so much parity and it's possible. But I was surprised to see John Hollinger of The Athletic now projecting the Kings to finish with 39 wins and fall to the 11th seed. I know Kings fans weren't happy about that either. It was kind of a speculative argument that they're just going to be hit by injuries probably. He felt like Sabonis and or maybe De'Aaron Fox and others could miss some games. Like I said, it just seems really speculative. Yeah. But do you see kind of a wide range for them finishing just because there's so much parity? They have an electric offense. They're so young and so fun, though.
Yeah, I think they'll win a lot of games. You know, there's definitely a wide range for what like seed they could finish as, just because, again, there's so many good teams. But yeah. I think they're a fun team. To your point, they're still very young, and they could have internal improvement from some of these younger guys. You know, what are we going to see? What does Keegan Murray do in this upcoming season, you know, with some more experience under his belt? Again, I sound like a broken record, but I am a big fan of bringing back the same core. I think one thing that tends to happen when you're looking at kind of these projections, and I'm not talking about, you know, John Hollinger in particular, but a lot of fans kind of look at the teams that went and made big splashy moves, like the Phoenix Suns bringing in Bradley Beal, or, you know, the Lakers made some big moves. So I think there's the initial reaction of like, oh, this team won the offseason, so you know, let's put them way higher. And a team like Sacramento that kind of just brought everyone back is going to have that kind of internal development. Chemistry is going to be better. Everyone's a bit more comfortable with their role and what's being asked of them. I think that kind of team can take a step forward. And even though there's not that big splashy, sexy move, I think they're still going to be one of the top teams in the West.
Those are wise words. Continuity is not sexy, but it's really important.
Yes.
You talked about how you think the Warriors might be the most difficult team to project. To what extent do you think that also applies to the Pelicans with Zion Williamson and the questions about his availability?
Yeah, they're probably the second hardest. we've seen this team, when they're at full strength, they have won games and they've played really well. And I think there was some drama in the offseason. We actually had an article. Christopher Dodson for Basketball News wrote this great article, you know, where he interviewed Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson and David Griffin, and kind of talked about how everyone's on the same page now. They really came together. And I think some of the drama that existed there about Zion and David Griffin kind of being secretive about the health of everyone and like when they were expected back, basically they've all acknowledged their role and what happened, and it seems like they're ready to move forward. And yeah, I mean, if Zion is healthy and Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum can, you know, play at the same level, Trey Murphy III can take that step forward. I mean, I've been so impressed with him and what he's shown early in his career. And then you have, you know, talented role players like Herb Jones, Jose Alvarado, Larry Nance Jr., Jonas Valanciunas. This team has a ton of talent. So, yeah, I mean, again, they're one of those teams that you kind of put the question mark, like, okay, well, if they stay healthy, they can be very special. I hope that Zion can be healthy and have a full season. I mean, he's so much fun to watch. We just kind of been robbed of that as of late with everything going on. One thing that Griffin did say in that article I mentioned is that they really saw for the first time Zion buy in off the court, you know, from nutrition, sleep, conditioning. You know, he apparently is locked in, and they're predicting him to have a monster season because, you know, all of those things that maybe he wasn't focused on before, He's been paying more attention to him. And you see that sometimes with guys. You know, he's 23 years old. I think he just turned 23, you know, like a couple months ago. So usually, like, I remember back in the day, guys would figure out like the nutrition and sleep component when they were much older because they wanted to stay in the league, basically. Now you're starting to, you know, see some of these guys figure it out at a much earlier age, and it's able to help them so much. So sounds like Zion has kind of put those things together and could have a breakout season. And if that's the case, then I think everyone's kind of too low on the Pelicans at this point.
One thing I think about a lot going into each season is which are the teams that there's the most pressure on them to succeed. Like Philadelphia would certainly be one in the Eastern Conference, for instance. But I'm thinking of the Mavericks and the Clippers as having a ton of pressure this season, just given that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George can opt out of their contracts after next season. And then the Clippers would basically just be starting from scratch at that point, if that were to happen. The Mavericks, of course, acquired Kyrie Irving last season and ended up missing the playoffs. And they don't want to be wasting Luka Doncic's prime or have him wanting to go elsewhere. Those are two teams that stand out to me. Your thoughts on those, and if there's any other team that you think stands out?
No, I absolutely agree. Those are the two teams to watch. The Clippers, you know, they've given this experiment some time. And I think the question is, can they take that next step? Can they, you know, become a legitimate championship contender? And if not, to your point, we could see this be the last year where, you know, this core is kind of together. You know, guys could leave in free agency. The organization could decide to blow it up and make a ton of different changes. So, yeah, I'm very curious. The Clippers have a ton of pressure on them to kind of make it work. Like some of these teams, they have a super wide open championship window. The Clippers don't. So they really need to get it together this season. And if they don't, then there's going to be changes, I'm sure. And then the Mavericks are a great one. You know, there was reports toward the end of last season that the Mavericks are starting to worry that if they don't put a contender around Luka, that he's going to want to go elsewhere. And that's, you know, so common today's NBA. You have Giannis, Embiid, they're making comments like, I want to win a championship, whether it's here or somewhere else. And so teams feel that pressure to go surround their superstar player with the right talent. And if it doesn't happen, then guys feel warranted and, you know, justified in asking out and going to find greener pastures somewhere else. So, yeah, I think the Mavericks, they're really tough, too, to kind of project just because, you know, on paper, you look at a backcourt of Luka and Kyrie and you're like, man, this team could be loaded. We saw Josh Green last year really, you know, come into his own as a solid 3-and-D role player. Grant Williams is an interesting offseason acquisition. And then I mentioned, you know, Derek Lively, I like the draft pick there as a center. He could really help them and kind of be a missing piece that they really haven't had in the front court. So on paper, it looks really good. But we saw last year, Luka and Kyrie as a 1-2 punch didn't exactly win many games. They were struggling. So they are the other team that has a ton of pressure on them. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with those two squads.
And also the Grizzlies are another in a long list of teams where it could go either way. They're young, they're defensive minded. They added Marcus Smart, but then there's the Ja Morant situation and he'll be missing. Is it 15 games to start the year?
25.
Oh, 25. 25.
Yeah, even bigger.
Yeah. So it's kind of hard to see how that's going to shake out. How do you regard this Grizzlies team? Because I think once the end of the year comes around, if they're healthy, they're going to be difficult to beat and they'll be that much more experienced and have a battle-tested, defensive-minded guy in Marcus Smart. But I don't necessarily hear a lot of people respecting them. It seems like they're kind of an easy team to discount right now, especially when you look at all those other scary teams out west.
Yeah, you know, I put them on my list of contenders just because I think when this team is at full strength, they're going to be pretty scary. You know, you have Ja Morant back for the second half of the season and the playoffs. Marcus Smart adds another great defender alongside Jaren Jackson Jr., which that could be very interesting. You know, they could have the perimeter defense and the interior defense. You also get Steven Adams back, who is huge for them down low as a rebounder and as a defender. And then Desmond Bane. I'm a huge fan of Desmond Bane. I've known him since back when he was in college, and he's just like the nicest guy in the world. But also, he's been fantastic. I mean, he's developed so much more than anyone expected. The guy slipped on draft night, and it was so shocking. But he's turned into a top five shooting guard in the NBA. incredible shooter, great defender. I mean, he can kind of do it all. So I think this team is very interesting. You're talking about a team that at full strength has a starting lineup of probably Ja Morant, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Steven Adams. They also have, you know, some interesting bench pieces and a nice supporting cast, you know, Luke Kennard, Derrick Rose, Xavier Tillman. They have some interesting pieces. So I think people are counting them out just because of all the Jaw stuff. And by the way, if anyone hasn't checked it out, Baxter Holmes at ESPN had a great article today kind of chronicling the Jaw situation and interviewed people in the Grizzlies organization, you know, Memphis business owners, a bunch of different people. It's a fantastic article that kind of looks at everything that is going on with Ja. I would highly recommend it. So I understand why people are looking at this team and thinking, okay, they're not going to have Ja. You know, they haven't been able to, you know, go deep in the playoffs. So people are kind of counting them out, but the talent is there. And I think it's very possible Ja comes back and has something to prove and is basically trying to just dominate and kind of move past everything that's been going on in his life. So, yeah, I think if people are counting the Grizzlies out now, come the second half of the season, I think they're going to regret that.
Yeah. As we get ready to close out, I want to squeeze in one possibly controversial opinion. I think the Blazers are not going to be as bad as a lot of people are expecting. I just like their starting lineup. Maybe they'll have some issues defending, possibly, just because they're a young team. But I think that they might have a better record than a lot of people are expecting. And then I just want to close on somewhat of an open-ended question that you can go however brief you want to on the Thunder. They could take a huge leap. I don't think we've talked about them much at all, other than SGA, or if you want to rave about SGA, you definitely can. I love SGA. What most excites you about the product that you expect to see on the court from them this season?
Yeah, you know, starting with Portland, I don't think they're going to be a playoff team or even a play-in team this year, but I think if you're a Portland fan, there's a lot to be excited about. You know, obviously this is a frustrating offseason, losing Damian Lillard, the best player in franchise history. A lot of fans want him to retire there, but you look at the return they got for Dame, the return they got for Drew Holiday, they have a really nice young core that is going to be exciting for some time. Scoot Henderson, as we already talked about, I'm a huge fan of his game. Anfernee Simons, Shaedon Sharpe, DeAndre Ayton, Robert Williams III, Matisse Thybulle, you know, this is a nice core that they have. Chris Murray. I like the core that they've assembled. Yeah, Jeremy Grant and Malcolm Brogdon are kind of the two ones that I'm really curious to see, you know, do they keep those guys? Or if not, they could flip Grant and Brogdon and then potentially get back even more young players and picks. And you're talking about, you know, this team having even more young assets. So, yeah, I think they've done a really good job with this rebuild. You know, Scoot and Simons are a really fun backcourt going forward. Shaedon Sharpe, I mean, he has all the potential in the world, is a crazy athlete. It's just he was so raw coming in. Now, because they're in a rebuild, there's no pressure on him to have to step in and produce right away. I mean, they can be patient with him and get him the reps he needs and put the ball in his hands and kind of focus on his development. I think this is a team that, you know, and then DeAndre Ayton too. I think this change of scenery is so good for him. And you know, maybe it will help him kind of change some of the things that he needs to work on in his game, like his motor and some of that. But he'll also get more touches. And that's something that he really wanted in Phoenix. So I think they have a really, really nice young core that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, even if they're not that competitive this season. If you're a Blazers fan, you got to be really excited about the future there. And then, yeah, the Thunder, man, Sam Presti has done a fantastic job. I love the team that they've kind of assembled. SGA is fantastic. I think he's still actually underrated among most NBA fans, just because they probably don't watch much Thunder basketball, but he is fantastic as a player. You could make the argument he's a top 10 player in today's NBA. Jalen Williams was phenomenal last year. I think he's going to take another step forward this year. Great scorer, has a really bright future. We already talked about Chet Holmgren. Defensively, he's going to make a huge impact, and I'm excited to see what he can do alongside SGA and Jalen. And then Josh Giddey is a great passer. He's shown flashes early in his career. They just have so many picks going forward, too. I saw Adrian Wojnarowski said they have 15 first-round picks and 22 second-round picks over the next 7 years. So, I mean, they're going to have so many studs to put alongside this group, this core they've already assembled. So, yeah, they have a super bright future, and Sam Presti deserves a ton of credit for the job he's done.
It's interesting the mix in the Western Conference. We have some of these teams that just have such bright futures, all these young stars, and then the star holdouts that aren't going away.
Yep.
You might want them to go away soon if you're these other teams, but they're clinging on and they're continuing to fight the LeBron Jameses and Currys and Durants and all these guys.
It'll be a super fun year.
They won't go away. Yeah, it'll be.
And that's always a ton of fun when you have, you know, a ton of contenders and veteran teams. And then you look at the bottom of the standings, that's, you know, teams like the Spurs, the Thunder, the Blazers, the Rockets that just have tons of young talent that should be interesting for years to come.
Yeah. This was a lot of fun. You did a great job helping me preview this Western Conference. Thanks for doing this, Alex.
Yeah, thanks so much. Take care.
Enjoy the season.